Hey everybody, welcome to Uhuru. This is the Melanin Infused podcast where we get to talk about marketing, PR, advertising, and we get to interview some really amazing people in the field. So today we are talking to Shalane Walker. She's the Associate Director of Media Planning and Strategy at Wavemaker in Chicago. That's right, you guys, we're in Chicagoland today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Of course, so happy to be here.
So I want to make sure that you all know this is actually going to be a two-part series. Shalane had so much information to give us that the first part that we're going to really talk about is her career path. And then the second part, we're going to talk about the complexities of her position. So to start off, as always, we have the first five. This is the portion of our segment dedicated to acknowledging the 5% of Black representation in the marketing and advertising field. So Shalane, recently on her book tour, Michelle Obama talked about the fact that it's not enough to be invited to sit at the table. In your career, you've likely been at a lot of team meetings to discuss strategies and marketing to minorities. Reflecting on your career, what would you say is more important than being invited to the table? Or is that enough? How has your position shaped the direction of advertising campaigns?
Great question. So when I think about being asked to be at the table, a lot of times when you're marketing to minorities, specifically AA, your opinion is accepted because they think if you're an AA woman, you know about marketing to AA women. The bigger challenge comes in when you're marketing to, let's say, the general market, the Hispanic, or in my case, the Arab woman living in Dubai or living in Saudi Arabia. In that case, you still have to show sometimes that you are still the expert, that you still know your audience, even if you aren't directly a part of that minority group or that general, quote, general market group. And a lot of times that can be the bigger challenge, is making sure your voice is heard and not overshadowed by others who may see you as less knowledgeable.
Your degree is in communications and PR. How did you end up choosing that degree? Did you always want to go into marketing?
So I actually kind of fell into it. Growing up, I wanted to be an actress. However, my mom didn't love this idea, so she pushed me into broadcast journalism. However, I got to my first semester at college in broadcast journalism and found out they had to do a lot of writing and write their own work. And writing is not my forte. I can do it, but I prefer not to do it all day, all the time. And so after meeting with my advisor, she suggested looking into the communications and PR field. And as I got into communications PR, I loved it because I already love to talk. I'm trying to be good today, so your podcast is not 3 hours. But I do love to talk, and this idea of learning how to better communicate with people and how to help people understand, for example, in HR communications, how do you take something that's important to HR and make it important to the rest of the employees? Or in the work we do, how do we take a message that's important to the brand and make it important to our consumers as well? So that's kind of how we fell into PR. And once I saw what it was about, what the opportunities were, I really loved it.
Do you recall any Black professors in college and if they brought anything different to a classroom lecture?
Definitely. So in my 4 years, I actually only had two Black professors at Michigan State University. One was a sociology professor, and then one was actually my senior level PR professor, and her name was Professor Mastin, and she was great. We actually ended up working together on a research project. She actually wrote a letter of recommendation for me, and we stayed in touch after graduation. I would say what she brought to me was seeing someone who looked like me in the field and was also successful. She also pushed the students really hard and challenged us and didn't let us settle for mediocre. A lot of times the joke with communications and PR is it's the high school after high school, but she really pushed us to do better. I would say a lot of times people didn't appreciate the hard work, but I really did. And after getting to know her and understanding her passion, she was also very passionate about PR and communications as relates to AA women. In fact, our research project was about the coverage of mental illness in AA women's magazines, which was submitted for an award and published.
Okay, so now we get to get into your job and how you got started. So can you give me a little bit of insight on your journey? After you graduated, how did you get started? What are some of the positions that you've held, and how did your career evolve?
Sure. So I graduated in the best year, 2008. And after 4 years of studious work, internships, research papers. I had one job offer, which was actually for an advertising agency called Starcom. I had not taken any advertising classes. I had not heard of media planning. And at Michigan State at the time, advertising was actually a part of the business school and part of the marketing curriculum. And so I didn't necessarily even overlap with those students. But I found about the job through a career fair, applied, got the job offer, and started my first day, and I was a media buyer on Bank of America in 2008. So a lot of fun stories I can tell you about that. One of my more interesting ones is we were working on a campaign to launch Bank of America countrywide home loans, and about 2 weeks before the campaign was supposed to launch, all the subprime negative coverage came out about how Countrywide, before they had been acquired, had been targeting subprime mortgages, and a lot of that had led to the housing crisis. And so we had to like cancel a whole campaign. I remember I was calling newspapers at like 10 o'clock at night, like, don't run our ad, we're sending new creative. Then from there, I rotated on to P&G, where I got to work on Secret, Venus, Pantene, Head & Shoulders, Aussie. And then from there, I rotated and worked on Anheuser-Busch, specifically on Budweiser and Michelob Ultra. After about 5 years, I was ready for an assignment overseas. And so I worked with a recruiter on LinkedIn, and I moved to Dubai, where I worked at an advertising agency on Johnson & Johnson, specifically targeting their Middle East and North African markets. So I worked on Listerine, Splenda, Tylenol, Imodium, Carefree, Regain. Unfortunately, simultaneously, but it was a lot of fun. You learn a lot. And I think, as I was speaking to earlier, it really challenges you, because I'm not marketing to somebody I know. I'm marketing to somebody that I've learned. And so there was a lot of consumer insights, mental data, research, talking to people, focus groups to really make sure I understood, for example, when it comes to oral hygiene, what's important to the man living in Dubai, and how does that differ from the man living in Saudi Arabia? If you think about feminine hygiene with Carefree, there's a lot of restrictions on what you can advertise, if you can imagine, in Saudi Arabia. And let's see, I was in Dubai for 3 years, and then I returned back to the U.S., and then I came back to Chicago, and now I'm working at a Group M agency doing similar media planning and buying for some food ingredients.
Interesting. So if someone is interested in living abroad, how would you suggest they go about making that transition? I mean, what would you say to a young person who hasn't even thought about that before?
I would say that anything is possible, and that if you want to do it, start putting the steps in place now. When I started looking at Starcom, I looked at, did they have offices overseas? At the time, this was in 2008, I had no idea if it would be Dubai or Mexico City or Shanghai, but I knew they had global offices, and so that was something that was important to me. After about 2 years, I met with HR. I got connections with global HR just so I could let them know, hey, if anything comes up, I'm ready. I talked to my boss about what's important when you look to go overseas. And then once I got promoted to supervisor, I started, if you would say, actively hunting. And so, you know, don't be afraid to reach out. I connected with, I think, 3 different headhunters within Dubai. And then, yeah, it took about 6 months and a few interviews, but then I was able to find the right position.
So as we know, we're in Chicago right now. How does Chicago fit into the digital media and marketing industry? What's it like to be a digital marketing professional here?
Oh, it's the best. I think you have New York, you have Chicago, and you have LA. Those are your 3 biggest ones. There's obviously sub-cities where you might have some smaller companies and smaller markets where you can still do it. But being in Chicago, with having so many agencies here, so many clients headquartered here, I mean, you've got McDonald's, you've got Allstate, you've got, my clients are headquartered here in Oak Brook, you've got Jim Beam, all their headquarters are here, so all the advertising resources are here. One thing I like about Chicago compared to New York, because I feel like we have the sort of East Coast, big city social lifestyle, but like the Midwest, like very friendly, very welcoming, like, you know, you're my neighbor. And so I really love that about Chicago.
Okay. And what's the realistic salary range for somebody who might be entering the marketing advertising field today who may be considering Chicago?
Well, it's better than it was when I started in 2008. I tell people when I started, I was making less than $30,000 for my first 2 years before I got promoted. So it's a little bit better than that now. I would say if they've had one internship, which I would highly recommend, they should be looking for something in the mid-30s. Sometimes independent agencies will pay a little bit more. And also that's specific to media planning. So if you're going into the creative agency side or the PR side, there might be a little bit more wiggle room. But between, I would say, the mid-30s to 40s in Chicago. And if anyone tells you you can't make it work, you can. You can talk to anyone who started in advertising as an assistant account executive, as a junior PR assistant. There's some sacrifices you might have to make for a couple of years, like living with a roommate, maybe not having a car, maybe taking one trip a year, but it's doable. And if it's something that you're passionate about, put in that legwork early on, and then, you know, a few years later, you'll be fine.
What are some of the new media tools and practices that students need to be learning right now in order to be prepared for jobs in the marketing industry today?
So I would say if you're looking at going into brand management, or if you're looking into going into media planning or buying like I am, Excel, like basic tool, but you will need it a lot. As a brand manager, you're crunching numbers on sales, ROI, lift, distribution percentages. And in media planning, you're looking at audience insights, calculating percentage of media spend for one vehicle versus another, adding different reach numbers together. So learn some Excel, learn some pivot tables. I would also say learn how to storytell, which is essentially like if you have a presentation, a lot of times I think the way our U.S. school system is we think very literally like part one, part two, part three, part four. But if you look at, for example, TED Talks, I think one reason those do so well is they take the data and they put it into a story. And so learning how to storytell will go really far in one, helping you get your ideas sold in, but also being a good communicator, because at the end of the day, that's what you're doing in marketing, is you're communicating a message from the brand to the consumer, from the brand to the business, whoever it might be. I also talk a lot about critical thinking. Again, something that's not necessarily taught, but it's this idea of A plus B equals C. And then some people just take that and run. Mm-hmm. But some people take a step back and say, why does A plus B equal C? Or what would happen if A plus B didn't equal C? And again, if you look at like brand strategy, media strategy, that's where it comes from, right? And insight is just taking something that's known but hasn't been articulated or thought about in that way. Going back to My Black is Beautiful, when you say, yeah, Black beauty historically has been seen as less than European beauty standards, everyone's like, oh yeah, like I know that. But it took someone to actually articulate that and then transition that into a campaign idea for My Black is Beautiful to be developed. So I would say those are my top four.
So why do you think it is that students don't have those critical thinking skills after leaving college?
I think it's just the way that we've been taught and the way the professors have been taught to teach. It's, okay, so if I have a project, I get the project syllabus from you, and I deliver the project exactly as it was on the syllabus, and I know that that's how I'll get graded. And so there's very rarely in your life where you're asked to do something that's not been, I guess, directly told to you. So it's usually like, okay, my professor said I need to study chapter 5. I'm going to study chapter 5. I'll do well on the test. But, you know, very rarely are you quizzed on like more conceptual thoughts of chapter 5. It's just like, okay, I need to know these 6 items of it. And so I think that's why. I think there's just in college few opportunities that I've seen where students are able to sort of think outside the box. I would say my professor that I spoke about earlier, Professor Mastin, I think that's one thing she did well, is she didn't just give us, here's what you need to do. She would just give us a thought or a concept, and then it was like, write about it, write a press release about it, journal some thoughts about it. And I know a lot of my classmates, that was very frustrating for them, because they're like, I don't know what she wants. Like, she didn't give me enough direction. Like, it's not clear. And it was like they couldn't sort of accept that freedom to think about it how they wanted to think. They wanted to be told how to think. And so I think that's where it comes. It's like we're being used to being told how to think. But especially as when it comes to media strategy or any type of strategy, marketing strategy as well, there is no right answer. I can spend $5 million in TV and $2 million on Facebook, or I could spend $3 million on TV and $1 million on Facebook. Like, there is no right answer. And so the way you develop the right answer is being able to think through what would happen if I did this, what would happen if I didn't, and being able to build a strong case for it. And so it goes back to asking yourself why. So, for example, if I tell my associate who's on my team to work on this competitive project, and then she does a competitive project, but let's say the charts aren't legible, there's no insights on it, there's no takeaways, like, we can't use that, that's not helpful. And so for her, the critical thinking would be, how are they going to use this competitive project? Why am I putting this together? And then when I understand that, then I can have an output that's actually going to be more useful versus like, she said do competitive. I did the competitive analysis. I'm done with it. It's like, but what comes next?
Okay. So I have to know, what's the single best piece of advice you think you ever received in your career?
So the first one, believe it or not, actually came from my pastor growing up. He said, find out who's in charge, find out what they want done, and do it. And that sounds so simple, but you would be surprised. A lot of times, a lot of the job stress and anxiety comes out from, one, you're doing something, but it wasn't given to you by the person who's actually in charge. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you didn't take the time to find out what they wanted done. Mm-hmm. You know, you just sort of got something and then ran off with it without taking the time to clarify the project. And then, you know, just do it. If your boss has told you, I need the competitive by X date, if for some reason you cannot do it, let the boss know, like communicate with her or him, and then, you know, get it done. And I think, you know, it sounds so simple, but can go so far. My second piece of advice was find someone to advocate for you when you are not in the room. So I think a lot of times we're good at touting our own horn and touting like how great we are if we have the chance. But a lot of times, especially in advertising, decisions will be made about your career and your placement that you aren't in the room to discuss. And I think about, you know, me being able to rotate onto the P&G team, which was at the time, I was like, oh my gosh, P&G, they didn't have that many openings. But it was because I had a boss who really pushed for me to have that spot. It wasn't me saying, I want to work on P&G. It wasn't me saying, put me on this team. It was my boss saying, she, I think, is going to do well. And I think this role would be good for her and good for her development. So, you know, find that person. Most ideally someone more senior to you who can, again, advocate for you when you're not in the room.
Excellent, excellent. So just to end off this quick segment, I'm going to let Shalane talk about a few extra tips for our college students that might be listening.
I would say, you mean, you talked about finding mentors, finding advocates, mm-hmm. you know, just find someone to talk to, even someone who says associate director or VP director, we're still people at the end of the day. Don't be afraid to reach out as a college student or even as an entry-level professional. Also, I would say when it comes to those first jobs, if there are any college students listening, don't be afraid to take the job just based on pay or something like that. Like if it's based on like the work you would be doing, maybe no. But you know, I think about the fact that I took this advertising job with no experience in advertising, and 10 years later it's been the best career choice I made. And that was just by being open. You know, I could have said no, I'm gonna wait and hold out for an actual PR job, which I probably wouldn't have got because layoffs started like 6 months later. But you know, I think that openness, a lot of times you graduate and it's like, I only want to do this. Which, again, it's good to be focused, but I think don't be focused to a point where you're limiting what you're willing to explore.
All right, you guys, thank you so much for joining us today. Just a quick note, again, this is a two-part series, so she's giving us a little bit of the career path that she's gotten, but check back again because we're talking to Shalane again. The second part of the interview is all about her career in media planning and buying, some tips that you might be able to use in your own career, how she's been able to market to different minority groups, the differences of campaigns in Dubai and the Hispanic market in America. There's just so much to learn. So check back in with us. Thank you so much again for supporting this podcast. Be sure that you hit the follow button so you can make sure you follow all of our podcasts. Again, if you want to visit us online, it's Uhuru Talks, UHURUTALKS.com. Special thanks to Mark Eliyahu and his song Journey, which can be heard in the background of this podcast. You can also find him on SoundCloud. If you'd like to support this podcast, be sure to head over to uhurutalks.com. We always try to keep the melanin popping on every episode, but we need your help. Supporting this podcast helps us to share stories, gain more insight, and fund up-and-coming students of color who are interested in pursuing marketing and advertising programs in college, always aiming for more than 5%. Again, it's uhurutalks.com. That's UHURUTALKS.com. All right, y'all, keep it classy. See you next time.